everybody, to the Locked On Lakers podcast. I'm Anthony Irwin. I'm joined by somebody we just kind of like bumped into each other. I don't really remember how we necessarily met. It was just interacting on Twitter, and then we met at Las Vegas Summer League a couple years ago. John Hamm, how are you doing, bud?
Doing well. How's it going out there?
It's, it's raining. And
you know it is here, too.
We're basically in the same spot then, really, when you think about
it. Yeah, I mean, the climate is just identical between the two. It's funny, one of our guys that covers the Thunder, Steve McGeehee for News 9, he tweeted out pictures of, like, hailstorms out in Los Angeles today. So I guess you're getting the business out there.
I work from home, and my mom came over to watch my daughter while I took care of this and then some other things. And she comes in, and she's like, did you see? I was like, what? Did you see? It was hailing. It was hailing. There was ice falling from the sky. I'm like, you realize how many places would happily trade like an hour or so of hail for whatever hellscape that they have going on where they happen to be. So
yes.
Yeah. We don't handle weather all that great out here.
I was going to say, for us, that's Tuesday.
Yeah.
It's just another day.
Today we're going to talk about, because the Lakers and Thunder are now in the middle of their home and home series that they have going on here. First, how do you feel about the home and home thing? I wish the NBA did more of that.
Yeah, it's kind of condensing a playoff series that sort of feel a little bit where, yeah. You get a little bit of coaching adjustment between the two games. And they've been doing it the past few years. I know, like, was it last year or the year before last? The Thunder had a home and home with Toronto. That was really weird. And, at that moment, it's like, if things break right, this could be a finals preview. And things didn't break right.
Yeah, I like the idea, though, because you don't get too many coaching adjustments from a night-to-night basis in the NBA. It's pretty much, we have our stuff, they have their stuff. It's just a matter of whose stuff works out better that night. You have some adjustments over the course of the game, but when you actually face a team two times in a row, like the Lakers in the next game are going to have to try to figure out a way to stop the NBA's best point guard, Dennis Schroeder, and it's going to be interesting to see how they do that.
If you squint, he's basically a Lou Williams. I mean, there's very little difference between the two. And then conversely, I mean, if there's a guy like Terrence Ferguson that had an off night, for example, he's been a little hot and cold this season, but can they add in a couple of wrinkles to get him some better looks? I think Ferguson is a guy that, he's a really good 3-point shooter. He just doesn't seem to get involved in the offense enough. So, it's that sort of thing. Like, okay, Tuesday night we did this. Let's try and do this on Friday and see if there's a different result. I think it's kind of fun.
It is. It really is. Ferguson always kills the Lakers. It was when he shot, he had his first 3-pointer and it was wide open. And I'm like,
yeah,
we're going down this path again, aren't we? And he missed it. Yeah. Now, I legitimately paused for a second, like, what? What is going on here? It's a fun matchup between the two teams. There's interesting dynamics on the basketball level. So what we're going to do, we're going to talk about the basketball level of this for a bit. And then as we get further into the show, we'll broaden our scope to the overall situations that both teams find themselves in. But just regarding the matchups here, I was actually surprised at Anthony Davis's final stat line last night. I think it really helps that Steven Adams had to focus more on either JaVale or Dwight, and then that allowed Davis to go up against smaller guys on a more regular basis over the course of the game last night. Though it really helped that Davis was hit, I think, 3 of 5 three-pointers. He hasn't done that so far this year. But Adams usually gives Davis problems. He gives most players problems, but Davis especially doesn't seem to like to bang bodies with Adams, and for good reason. Do you think the Thunder will do anything to get more of that matchup to have Adams on Davis a little bit more often?
Yeah, so it's an interesting situation. So Steven Adams has been dealing with what they call a knee, or what they've been calling a knee contusion. Mm-hmm. He actually missed a couple of games. He was actually, you know, he was benched, and he wasn't playing that well last night, but he was benched towards the end of the game. They went with Nerlens Noel down the stretch. And afterwards, Billy Donovan made a reference to the knee contusion and said, you know, he's not necessarily on a minutes restriction, but they're just being mindful, I guess, of his playing time. And his minutes are down from last season, and Noel's are up a little bit. So I think it's kind of a combination of trying to get Noel a little bit more time, trying to be more mindful of Adams' minutes, plus the knee injury, and that's really affected him. So he, you know, he was part of the crew that got roasted by LaMarcus Aldridge earlier this season. You know, Anthony Davis is obviously a lot better than LaMarcus Aldridge, but kind of a similar cover inside outside kind of guy.
Yeah.
It's that's really tough. And Adams has been, again, kind of underwhelming in a lot of aspects this season. And you know, it's a big guy to throw at Anthony Davis. That helps, but you know, the Thunder need more out of him, but I don't know if he's just physically limited, if he's mentally limited, but you know, this isn't quite the Steven Adams, you know, dominant defensive force we've seen from the past couple of years.
We'll talk more about the idea of these guys as trade chips and the impact that might have on them on a psychological level. And then, you know, just the level of buy-in that you get as a result of those things just kind of always being in the air. I do kind of wonder then if Adams is dealing with that bruised knee or the knee contusion, if OKC is limiting his minutes, because what they can't have is him suffering a major injury, and there goes this huge trade chip that they might be able to get something for as teams kind of figure out what they need over the course of the season. We'll talk about that more in the second and third segments, but that's definitely something to kind of keep an eye on. Let's take a quick second. Let's do that. So let's take a quick second here. When we come back, I want to talk more about Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, one of my favorite players, Danilo Gallinari. Last night seemed visibly frustrated that he wasn't able to torch JaVale McGee more. So that was kind of fun to watch. So we have plenty of that stuff to get to here in a second. So Danilo Gallinari is probably the worst possible matchup for JaVale. it was something to behold when Gallinari would catch the ball out there on the perimeter and see how open he was. And then I don't know if you noticed the same thing. He kind of looked around to say, guys, I'm always wide open while McGee is trying to guard me. We should maybe try to get back to this matchup a little more. Did you notice that?
I noticed that a little bit. And so I was just talking with Brett Dawson, who is now out in Los Angeles covering the Lakers and Clippers for The Athletic. And he made a reference to, like, you know, he really wanted to beat the Clippers. I think he kind of wanted to, get a little bit of revenge there, and maybe just being in LA, right? Just overall, just kind of wanted to show out a little bit. But that is something I pointed this out on a couple of my podcasts. I'm a little concerned about winner agendas going to start bubbling up, and, you know, everyone is sort of, you know, on the same page at the moment, and, you know, they play really hard and they do some good things, but you know, how long is that going to sustain, especially if they keep losing close games? It's going to be interesting with all these other factors you've alluded to as well.
Yeah, it's just such a difficult spot to be in as a team. The Lakers dealt with this for basically the entirety of my time covering them, where either you were a young guy and there was inherent buy-in because you were picked high, or in Kuzma's case, you showed out, so now there's a commitment from that. Or you were a veteran on like a one-year deal, and why in those cases care about the situation that you're playing in when obviously the team isn't bought into you personally? And I kind of sensed a lot of that from OKC last night. It's we are very well versed in that vibe, and OKC gave some of that off. Now they do play harder. I do think they played harder than some of the Lakers teams, especially the Byron teams early on. But you know, that only goes so far. And as you said, when the results aren't coming, it gets even more frustrating. Those things get even more blown out of proportion.
Yeah, they can. And look, everything, you know, they may be able to hold it together. Now they've had a difficult schedule to start the season. Yeah. It is going to lighten up. I think at last check on Basketball Reference, the Thunder have had the fourth hardest record. And that's obviously a very fluid thing from night to night. But, mm-hmm. you know, needless to say, when you have a road back to back, that is the Clippers, then the Lakers, that indicates you've probably had a tough schedule lately. I got to give a lot of credit though, because I mean the defense has been really good this season, mm-hmm. and really they've only had one really bad game. They dropped a complete egg in Indiana, but other than that, you know, the defense has been solid. A Clippers team that dropped 150 points on Atlanta barely got 90 mm-hmm. against them. I thought even what they did against the Lakers last night, holding them to, was it 112? Mm-hmm. Was that the final score?
Yep.
That seemed like, you know, like that was admirable that they held them to that, quite honestly. So they're doing a lot of good things in that area. The offense is kind of still a work in progress, but even that's better than it was to start the season. You know, really, the difference is you know, not having that star talent that OKC's had the past few years.
Yeah, it's pretty tough to. I mean, it's not to say that they aren't a talented team, because you have Chris Paul is obviously still one of the better point guards in the league, even at his advanced age. Adams, even while he's been disappointing, he's still a center that just about every good team would like to have. Gallo is, I think, one of the more underrated players. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, like all these guys, there's a good team there. It's just a matter of, can the situation allow them to be that good? And I guess we'll just kind of let that segue over to, where does OKC go? Because they do kind of feel like, I mean, obviously not the same hoopla that surrounded the 2012 Dwight Mayer Laker team, but it's that the season after that, when the Lakers were getting ready to sell off pieces and they were getting ready for this rebuild, I feel like that's kind of, there's a lot of potential energy with OKC, and it's just a matter of what's going to force the fire sale. Am I overreading that situation, or how does that look from your perspective?
No, I think you're along the right lines, and you know how I've described it when I'm analyzing the team locally is, look, you just read off, you know, the makings of a perfectly good basketball team, mm-hmm. and you know there is certainly a path to, you know, reinforce it a little bit and have a perfectly good basketball team, one that is equivalent to, you know, the old Atlanta Hawks teams that were just happy to make the playoffs, or the mm-hmm. Bucks teams, right? That was like under Herb Cole. They just wanted to make the playoffs and were happy.
There are spots in the West this year too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there are. And so, I mean, having said all that, I don't think the Thunder front office, I don't want to say they don't care about this season. That would be inaccurate. Mm-hmm. I don't think they're not going to derail their long-term plans just based on this season. If they had come out of the gate looking like the 2015 Golden State Warriors, maybe they would change that a little bit. But I think, you know, they're sort of a realistic, okay, let's see what the team looks like. We'll kind of let everything play out. As you mentioned, you know, there's teams across the league that are going to start buying. And, you know, I think OKC is going to be, whenever the price gets met, whatever that price is for some of these guys, you know, I think they're going to move those guys like Gallinari, like Schroeder. Mm-hmm. Chris Paul's a little bit tougher. I think that's the long-term plan, and not necessarily that they plan on collecting 20 future first-round picks and using all of them. But I mean, it's currency. It's stuff that they can use, you know, to move up in the draft a few spots, or if a disgruntled guy becomes available that they can pounce on. It just gives them more stuff to work with for those opportunities.
Yeah, that's the most important. I guess, well, I just said this the other day yesterday on the show. One of, I think, the most underappreciated abilities is to understand either you as a player or the situation as an organization. And in this case, like, I could totally see if you moved this Thunder team to like Chicago, they would be perfectly fine with making the playoffs and not kind of kickstarting their rebuild. But I do think that Sam Presti is smart enough to recognize, you know what, even the success that they have this year would be somewhat fool's goldish. Not that it's completely, not that it doesn't mean anything, but it's just that it would just be kind of kicking the tires or kicking the can down the road on eventually rebuilding. And that was always one of my frustrations with the Lakers was that,
right,
you know, they had Powell and he was always in trade rumors, but they never pulled the trigger on deals that would have gotten them first, you know, extra first rounders here and there that they really needed on the other end of the Steve Nash and Dwight Howard deals. They just kind of let guys walk. And I really do think that kind of hindered their ability to rebuild faster. And it took 7 full years to get to where the Lakers are right now. And even that was a result of LeBron just deciding randomly, no, you know what, I'd like to be in L.A. You
know? Right.
So it's interesting here with the Thunder. I'm really fascinated by the path that they take forward.
Yeah, and so, you know, you mentioned, too, the other thing that you have to understand is the market you play in. And I don't know if you've noticed, Anthony, there's a little bit of a difference between L.A. and OKC.
Slightly. We have the same weather right now.
Right, same weather. you know, a lack of beaches around here. you know, a lack of very popular lifestyle. You know, okay, it's like, look, you just understand teams like Oklahoma City, like Memphis, Minneapolis, I don't know, pick your bottom 5 or 6 markets, are going to be at a disadvantage. I mean, how many of the NBA one percenters have signed with a small market team? LeBron, and you have to acknowledge that Cleveland and proximity to his hometown played a factor in that.
Yep.
So I think the Thunder understand, like, yes, they made a trade for Paul George, and at that time it made sense because they had Russell Westbrook and they were trying to rebuild something back up. How long did Paul George stay? 2 seasons. Mm-hmm. They're not really interested in, okay, can we be good for a couple of years? And then we'll take a step back and, okay, then we'll try to be good for a couple of years. They want to have another like stretch of success, kind of like what they had. And for OKC, that means probably through the draft.
Yeah.
They can, they're just super unlikely to get a star free agent. Yeah, maybe trade is a possibility, but the draft is the most likely place to get those guys. And then if you do, you could probably lock that guy up for 8 or 9 years. So
yeah.
That's where they're focused, and it's a strategy, I think, just being in this market, they kind of have to lean on.
Yeah, I completely agree. And the other thing, too, with, you know, trading off guys like Schroeder and Gallo and even Adams, depending on what they can get for him, is you get those first rounders. And like you said, you don't even have to use all of them. So if a situation where you can trade for a Paul, you know, the next Paul George equivalent pops up. If you have all the first rounders that they are going to have moving forward, that makes acquiring that guy a lot easier than, well, would you be interested in taking on an extra year of Adams or an extra year of Schroeder if that costs, you know, so-and-so extra picks? It's just it's easier if those guys are off the books, you can take a star into cap room and use a couple, you know, a pick or two, so that even while you're rebuilding, you have some kind of legitimate NBA presence as that rebuild takes place. That's the path I would kind of head towards if I was running the Thunder. But that's just
One example I used, like, if we could fold space and time for a moment, and let's say OKC had all of these draft picks and all these assets, and the Knicks had Kristaps Porzingis, and he was available, I think those two goals would have aligned at that point. In other words, I think if OKC had all these draft picks, they would have gone in on a guy like Kristaps Porzingis because those guys don't come on the market very often. So, you know, look, a guy like James Harden, people probably know the Thunder traded him. It's not talked about very much, but the Thunder had James Harden and traded him. But yeah, I mean, some of that was Houston. Houston collected the draft capital.
Simmons especially never brings it up.
No, I'm shocked. I try to get like his opinion on it, and I just can never find it. But yeah, I mean, basically, that was a situation that 6 months prior to that trade, no one imagined that it was going to happen, and then it did, and then Harden turned out to be far better than I think a lot of people expected. Those are the kind of opportunities that OKC he's going to be looking for as well. I don't think they're necessarily going to just straight, you know, Philadelphia process this thing for 4 or 5 years. You know, they've got more to work with going into this rebuild than Philly had when they did.
Yep. All right, let's take another quick second here. When we come back, we'll see if we could find some, you know, we'll play around. I always have the trade machine open in front of me. So we'll see if the Lakers and Thunder can kind of pair up for a deal that might make sense for both teams. Today's show is brought to you in part by MyBookie. Head on over to MyBookie.ag to place a bet, hopefully win said bet, and then collect your money as fast as possible. If you use the promo code LOCKEDONNBA, you get to double your initial cash input. That's quite the deal. You wind up winning right from the get-go, literally. So not many deals like that out there elsewhere. Today's MyBookie bet of the day, it's a bit tricky one right here. So you have Trailblazers and Bucks. And as of right now, it looks like Milwaukee's going to be giving up 8 points to the Blazers in that one. And you're going to have Pelicans and Suns, with Phoenix probably giving up 3.5-ish points to the Pelicans. I feel a lot more confident in the Bucks bet. I would probably make that one, even though there are obviously more points going towards that one. The Trailblazers are a mess. And they just signed Melo, and everybody was all excited because he made a few shots here and there. I believe he finished the game with the team worst plus minus, and I would imagine that's going to continue. If he starts, that means there are going to be some possessions where he's going to be matched up against Giannis right from the get-go. That's probably not going to end well. So go ahead and take the make your bet on Milwaukee. Do it at mybookie.ag. Enter the promo code LOCKEDONNBA to double your initial investment. That's mybookie.ag. Again, mybookie.ag. Use promo code LOCKEDONNBA. MyBookie, you play, you win, you get paid. So as we said, it looks like the Thunder are going to be heading in one direction. The Lakers right now are about as good as they could possibly have hoped for, especially that I could have possibly hoped for. I didn't envision this start quite. The thing that is worth wondering about, though, is, you know, the Lakers, while they are as good as they are, and I consider them one of, you know, the top-tier title contenders, they're still only contenders. I wouldn't necessarily make them favorites. And one thing to watch for over the course of the season is whether or not, you know, a contender becomes a favorite based off of some move they make over the season. So teams like Oklahoma City, even while they aren't going to figure into the title picture in the traditional sense, they could have an immense impact on the way that this season plays out. So, John, I guess I'll start here. Do you think there's a combination of players? Because it would mostly just be players. The Lakers don't have any picks at this point to really offer up. But do you think there's a combination of players that the Lakers could offer up that might land them, say, a Dennis Schroeder?
I mean, possibly. I've been curious what Schroeder's market might actually be.
Yeah.
You know, can they get a first rounder for him? He does have 2 years left on his contract at a perfectly, you know, $15.5 million is about the salary of an average NBA starter, right? Mm-hmm. So could they get a first round pick? Possibly. And like you said, the Lakers, you know, rightfully so, cashed in a lot of those to get Anthony Davis.
Yep.
Now, could there be a three-team deal? Possibly. Maybe I could see that.
Yeah.
Like, for example, I'll just throw out Danny Green as a possibility. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe OKC couldn't use him, but if they could get involved in a three-team deal where another team would give up a draft pick, maybe that would work. But, you know, it's interesting because I've looked at the Lakers, obviously, as a Chris Paul suitor because, you know, it didn't work, in 2011? Yeah, I got to get the banana boat together, and David Stern's not in charge, so he can't jump in and make a mess of this anymore.
Yep.
But some of the challenges there is Chris Paul's salary being what it is. You know, it would take like a 3 or 4 for 1 trade, and that's really tough to do during the season. So, you know, then what kind of depth are the Lakers sacrificing? You know, Chris Paul's is one thing. If you go for a Dennis Schroeder, you're kind of swapping out one piece for another. I don't know. It's interesting. I would keep an eye on the Lakers just because, like you said, I think they should be active. And I think with a LeBron team, they're always going to be active when it comes to the trade market.
Yeah, the reason I bring up Schroeder is because one thing that we've really noticed over the course of the season is that opposing teams that apply pressure to the Lakers ball handlers really seems to bother them. And Schroeder, you know, given all his faults, I'm not really the biggest Schroeder fan. Unless he's playing the Lakers, then he's, you know, point God.
That's like whenever Andrew Wiggins plays OKC, we think he's a like Hall of Famer.
Well, what's funny is that like back in the 90s, that would be enough to acquire a player. Is that if you played well enough against your team often enough, your front office would go out and try to get them and say, look, if he plays like this against us, just imagine what he might do for us. didn't usually work out that way, though. But, yeah. You know, with Schroeder, he does handle pressure well. He does have he's an adept passer. He's, you know, an all right defender. I wish he wouldn't die. He's basically Rondo. Like he's younger Rondo, but I don't think he's as good as Rondo was at his peak. But not at all. He's a perfectly okay starting point guard. The only problem is for me is that I'm looking at the $15.5 million not from a perspective of like he isn't worth $15.5 million as a starting point guard, but like you said, the Lakers only have, like, Danny Green is on the books for $15 million, so you could swap those guys one for one, but I actually think that makes the Lakers worse, probably. Right. You could try to combine, like, KCP's contract and JaVale or Cousins or something like that. Yeah, and you could try to get close to that number, and maybe that makes you a better team. But you know, KCP has the no trade clause, and I don't know if, you know, OKC, unless you're attaching a first rounder, which the Lakers don't have, why would OKC do that trade? So it's kind of an awkward partnership here that they would be trying to figure out. It would take a third team, like you said, and at that point, trying to predict a three-team trade is like trying to predict, you know, a five-team parlay over the course of a Wednesday night in the NBA.
Right. Yeah. And that's where it becomes really difficult to kind of piece these together because, you know, again, like you mentioned, there's the financial aspect of getting into the range of $15.5 million, and probably what the Lakers would be offering for the most part is salary relief. Mm-hmm. Because if, you know, if KCP agreed to such a hypothetical trade, you know, then OKC could get off of Schroeder's money sooner. Mm-hmm. I don't know if the Thunder are high on Talen Horton Tucker. They've already got, you know, like a tweener or two on the team already. I don't know if that would grease the skids at all. But yeah, the challenge there is, again, during the season, if you have to make like a 3-for-1 trade, you know, then OKC has got to offload someone else to create a roster spot or, you know, throw someone else into a trade that the other team really doesn't want. It gets really muddy.
My favorite weird rumor that we got right after the Chris Paul trade was that somehow OKC was going to buy out Chris Paul.
Oh, God.
Did you see any of that?
Well, mostly it was Stephen A. Smith screaming at the television about it. And I'm like, why in the world would Oklahoma City pay Chris Paul even half of his set? You know, he's even $60 million to go play for somewhere else. I mean, it doesn't make sense. They are under no obligation to, quote unquote, do right by Chris Paul. Chris Paul is on an contract where he's very handsomely rewarded, and it's, you know, you don't always get to have your cake and eat it too. So just this wild sort of push on, well, the Thunders need to buy him out. I'm like, unless Chris Paul's gonna walk away from like all of it, it's not gonna happen.
And also, Chris Paul being the head of the players union, I believe, still, right? I think he's still in that position. I don't think it would be a great look for the head of the players union to give up $50 million of his contract to go join the Lakers. That probably wouldn't go very well.
No, not at all.
It's a tough, as fun as the matchup is for the teams when the teams meet on the court, because I really do like when the teams face off, and we'll kind of end here in a bit on how we think Friday night's game might go. But as fun as they are to play against each other on a basketball court, they are that frustrating a pairing to try to figure out a deal that benefits both teams.
Yeah. Unfortunately, the Lakers cannot trade the dead money of Luol Deng. That would help. yeah. But yeah, not tradable. So
that'd be funny. They should allow that. They should.
Yeah.
if it's on your books anyway, just give up. All right. You can have Luol's corpse and.
I mean, I wonder if that's not going to become a reality because NBA teams love to trade things. I think the Celtics like floated the idea on trading some of your lottery balls, basically, as part of a trade.
Yeah.
You know, so why not allow a team to say, hey, we will give you a first round pick if you take over the payments on Luol Deng's contract. And another team says, sure, we'll pay $15 million for a first round pick. So, just as an aside, I wouldn't be shocked if that doesn't become something like that actually happens maybe in the next agreement.
What we're basically saying is that the NBA is addicted to eBay.
It is.
They can't help themselves.
Very much so.
Let's finish up with how we think Friday night's game is going to go. Again, it's a fun matchup. If the Lakers play the way that they did Tuesday night in OKC, they lose the game. I don't think they played particularly well in that matchup. But, you know, that being said, for OKC, I would love to see kind of that, you know what, F this, let's just actually go out and really win a couple games here before, you know, the fire sale starts happening. I would like to see OKC in the playoffs just from the standpoint of, like, I think to a certain extent trying to win should be rewarded more than it is. You know, but again, it that wouldn't necessarily, as we've said, that wouldn't necessarily be the smartest thing for the organization. But how do you think Friday night plays out?
Friday night, I'm looking at, so first of all, the Thunder are 0-6 on the road so far this season, which means they are very comfortable playing at home because all five of their wins have come in Chesapeake Energy Arena. You know, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, I'm curious now. He had a little bit of trouble, I think, with all those giants on the front line, Anthony Davis, JaVale, yeah. And, you know, can he overcome that at home? Like, he has developed like this sort of a scoop shot that he's used when he gets into the paint, especially over taller players that he wasn't really able to unleash in Los Angeles. So, you know, can he get back on track? Chris Paul didn't have a great game either.
No.
You know, he's been more involved in the offense. I think, you know, if OKC can sort of replicate what they were doing defensively, throwing the kitchen sink at LeBron, throwing the kitchen sink at Anthony Davis, and just, you know, daring Rajon Rondo to shoot from basically anywhere, I think they have a chance. But also, I guess Kyle Kuzma, they found his eyeball.
They did.
And put it back in? Good.
It's still attached. He's well, the way the Lakers
that was
handle
wicked.
The way the Lakers handle every piece of injury news, it's everybody is day-to-day. So, like, Pete and I, after the game, because they did the same thing actually during the game where they said Kyle Kuzma is questionable to return. And we all watched him walk off the court with blood coming out of his eye. Of course he wasn't coming back. So, like, we've decided that it's this, like, existentialist take of theirs that we are all considered day to day or questionable.
That's right.
Or whatever.
So
as I they say that they think Kyle Kuzma's going to be good to go on Friday, though, you know, even there, his primary ability is shooting, and if one of his eyes is shut halfway, I don't know what kind of a threat he becomes as a shooter.
Yeah, that's another thing that the Lakers could kind of roll out there that wasn't there in the last game that might provide an offensive boost.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, like I say, the OKC defense has been really good this season. They've done a really good job for the most part defending the 3-point line. The Lakers, you know, hit a high percentage the other night. But, you know, again, this Thunder team is feisty, if nothing else. And, you know, they beat Philadelphia at home in overtime. So I would not assume that the Lakers can come in as well as the Lakers are playing. And my goodness, they look really good. Yeah, I don't think they can expect to just sort of roll in and roll out with a victory here.
Yeah, they've been kind of playing with fire a little bit. They toyed around with Sacramento. They blew out Atlanta, but even there for stretches looked like they were just kind of going through the motions. Last night or Tuesday night, they kind of again kind of went through the motions and were able to squeak it out late. It does kind of feel like they're getting ready for that really annoying loss, maybe even a blowout loss. And Friday against a really good home team feels like the kind, like if I was to give a MyBookie bet or whatever, I would probably say maybe fade the Lakers in this next one.
Yeah, and don't underrate that OKC nightlife. I mean, they're going to be flying in on Thursday.
Yeah.
You know, the bars are going to close at 2 a.m., and oh boy, they're going to just be just staggering.
Amen to that. Well, thank you very much. thank you very much for hopping on, John. This was a blast, as always. Let's not wait 8 months to do this again.
Yeah, definitely. We need to make this more common thing. Thanks for having me on, man.
Anytime. All right, that was John Hamm of 107.7, the franchise out there in Oklahoma City. He also hosts the Dream Team Pod with a few other people who cover the team out there. He's honestly one of my favorite people in this entire industry, so check him out whenever you get a chance. Tomorrow's show is going to be a lot of fun, so we will talk to you then. Have a great rest of your day. Make somebody else's, and we'll talk to you tomorrow.